Chapter 19. There were seating for 20 at the Goldenfels banquet table. The compartment was austere. It was ordinarily the petty officer's mess. The lieutenant to Adele's left had informed her. But the attendants were uniformed, and she didn't recall ever seeing a better wine list, even in the old days when her parents were entertaining the rich and powerful of Cinnabar. "How did you come to your present position, mistress?" the lieutenant asked politely. His fingers played with his wine glass, but his eyes were on her with the intensity of a bird of prey. His name was Grignier, the Goldenfels signal officer. He was the voice she'd talked to 4 hours earlier. Adele snorted, "Necessity. My father was in shipping and lost everything to Cinnabar privateers. What do you think? Do you suppose I like working for unlettered boobs from Novi Sverdlovsk? Though the woman isn't so bad for a farmer." She glanced past Grignier toward the head of the table, pretending to be concerned that she might be overheard, but too resentful to keep a close bridle on her tongue after the second glass of wine. Adele was playing a part, but it was an easy one. Any one of a score of the pupils she studied with the academic collections would do for a model. Given the way the recent war had gone, the reference to Cinnabar privateers was perfectly believable. She suspected that several of them were trading on their education to stave off poverty instead of living as cluttered dilettantes as they'd expected. The same thing happened to Adele, of course, but a little earlier, and the result of the Three Circles conspiracy rather than the war. The worst trouble she had in being the librarian to the Elector of Kostroma wasn't the pay or even the conditions. It was quite simply that nobody really cared about the things an educated person knew and did. Her presence had been only a bauble for the Elector to dangle in front of other vulgarians. Oh, yes, Adele Mundy understood the feelings of a resentful savant working for wealthy Philistines. "And yet it appears most of your yacht's crew come from Cinnabar," Grignier said. "Don't you find that very difficult, given your background?" "If it were my yacht," Adele said with a trace of asperity that wasn't feigned, "then you'd have a right to be puzzled. As it is, I find the situation less difficult than starvation, which was the only choice." She looked around morosely. The Goldenfels purser sat to her right and Vessie to the purser's right at the far end of the table. Betts was directly across from Adele, but even if he'd tried, he couldn't have heard what she was saying. In addition to the general noise of dinner, the music of a live pipe band was being transmitted through the ventilating ducts. The Clivemoths sat beside Captain Bertram and his first officer at the head of the table. They were talking loudly and with animation. From snatches Adele heard, John Tsitsis was the primary subject. Daniel was across the table between the Goldenfels second lieutenant and her engineering officer. "Ah, yes," Adele continued. "They're not only from Cinnabar, most of them. They were the ship's crew while she was in the Cinnabar Navy." She carefully avoided saying RCN, because the acronym was RCN jargon. She'd known as a scholar, long before she became a spy, that sometimes the form of a statement was as important as its content. Until a few months ago, the Klimovs bought the ship and hired the crew at the same time. "Remarkable," Grignier said, though he must have been aware that ever since the two vessels had rubbed against one another on Todos Santos. "That's why I didn't suggest you capture the officers tonight and rush the ship," Adele said, taking a spoonful of the excellent pork fricassee a steward had just served. "I heard them discussing it before they accepted the invitation. The watch officer, he's a clod named Chunin, will vent the fusion bottle into the hull if that happens. That'll destroy the Earth Diamond, and I shouldn't wonder if it'd damage your ship as well, since it's so close." "You sure they'd do that?" Grignier said, his eyes narrowing. "That'd be suicide. Literal suicide." Adele shrugged. "I know the captain believes Chunin'll do it," she said through a mouthful. "They're hardcore Navy, as I said. Apparently they've got quite a reputation, or anyway they think they do. Death before dishonor and that sort of nonsense." She grimaced at the Alliance officer. "They're dolts like the farmers I work for. But I will say that they seem to know their business." "Yes," said Grignier without expression. "The Princess Cecile did indeed have a reputation when she was in naval service. And I'm inclined to agree that her crew know their business." He looked hard at Adele, holding his part full wine glass, but wholly concentrated on her reaction to what he was about to say. "So, mistress, the object you mention does appear to be a remarkable one. If not by force, then how do you plan to bring it into hands where it will be properly appreciated?" A steward offered a bowl of something starchy whipped with bits of onion. Adele nodded and then nodded again for a second spoonful. When the servant left, she quietly leaned over with her eyes on her plate. I told you my father was in shipping. He had 17 vessels until the bloody war. He saw to it that I learned their systems back to front. If you'll give me 15 minutes with your own transmitter, I'll set up a program that'll shut off all the yacht's power when you send the signal. If you do that at 3 in the morning, the worst there'll be is a shot or two from the sentries, if they don't throw their guns down when the lights go out. I don't understand, said Grenier. He didn't raise his voice, but when a steward came by with a carafe of wine, he waved the fellow away curtly. Adele grimaced. Perhaps we can get out of here for a few minutes, she said under her breath. Grenier glanced at the head of the table. Captain Bertram was entertaining the Klimov with a story that required a great deal of hand-flourishing. A less arrogant fellow might wonder why a man whom he'd first cheated, then humiliated, was working so hard to be engaging. But not the Count. Arrogance wasn't the same thing as stupidity, but it tended to have similar results. Yes, Grenier said, shoving his chair away from the table. It was bolted to deck rails that allowed it to slide 6 inches forward or back. Follow me in a minute, and I'll take you to the signals room. We won't be disturbed there. Adele ate her starch, which hadn't begun as potatoes. She was nervous, but she'd spent many years poor to the point of starvation. Emotion might rob her of her appetite, but nothing took away her ability to eat. After a minute, neither more or less, Adele rose, folded her napkin beside her plate, and walked out the hatch at her end of the compartment. Mr. Pasternak was coming the other way, guided by a discreet steward. The engineer's eyes brushed over Adele without focusing. Whether or not Pasternak recognized the vintages, he'd certainly shown his appreciation of the Goldenfels wine. The nearest restroom, the head, as she learned to call it in the RCN, was just outside the banquet hall, but Lieutenant Grenier gestured to her from the hatch of the companionway down the corridor instead. She followed him upward. The whisper of their boot soles on the steel tread set up pulses in the armored tube that rushed back and forth like heavy surf. Grenier motioned her up alongside him. The Goldenfels was a much bigger ship than the Princess Cecile, and even her companionways were on a larger scale. "I was surprised when you signaled us as soon as we fell into orbit here, mistress. Not every rich man's secretary would know how to use a starship's communications gear, even if it were left unattended." "I told you," Adele said. "The Klimovs pay me as their secretary, but my father trained me as an assistant engineer. His assistant. He shipped as engineer on a privateer before his share of a convoy of fullerenes let him buy his first vessel." Grenier looked at her in the green light of the glow strips forming long circles up the companionway, but he said nothing till he opened the hatch marked A-level and led her out. At the end of the corridor to the left, directly above the banquet room, was the bridge. Its hatch was open, but a spacer with a submachine gun stood guard there. Grenier stopped, instead, at an unmarked compartment on the left of the corridor, opened the hatch with an electronic key. "Go in, mistress," he said. There were three consoles, one of them occupied. The man on duty looked up as Adele entered. "I have some questions to ask the lady, Bandang," Grenier said as he closed the hatch. "I'm not sure how she's going to react, so I'd like you to be prepared." The duty man gave Grenier a flat stare, then looked at Adele. He ostentatiously reached into a drawer of his console and withdrew a service pistol, which he pointed toward the corner past her head. If Adele had been armed, she wasn't. The contingent from the Princess Cecile knew they'd be searched before they were allowed to board the Alliance vessel. She could have shot Bendang through the eye before she realized a gun isn't a magic wand that you wave to make people do what you want. "So, Mistress Mundy," Grenier said, "how is it that you knew you were speaking to the Goldenfels? We identified ourselves as the Belle Ideal." "You did after you reached orbit," Adele said with a justified sneer. "When I pinged you half an astronomical unit out, a few minutes after you returned to your sidereal space, your transponder was still saying you were the Goldenfels. When you changed the identification, I knew you'd be willing to help me get the Earth Diamond." Grenier's expression was becoming locked into frustrated surprise. "You queried our IFF when we were out that far? How did you locate us so quickly?" Adele shrugged, a gesture that was becoming as habitual in this conversation as the Alliance officer's amazement. "The yacht still has its naval sensors," she said. "I suppose they wouldn't always have picked up your arrival when we were on the ground, but they did this time." That was a lie. The Sissy hadn't been aware of the new arrival until the Goldenfels announced herself falsely. But it was a perfectly believable lie, one which fit all the facts at Grenier's disposal. "Wait in the corridor, Bendang," he ordered, without taking his eyes off Adele. Part of his mind was probably considering the fact that he hadn't bothered to reprogram the automated system while the Goldenfels was still in the Matrix. "Go on, now!" Bandane glared at him and ostentatiously stuck the pistol in the waistband of his fatigues before he obeyed, but he did obey. Grenet handlocked the hatch behind him. The Alliance officer forced a smile. When the interview began, he believed the power was in his hands. Now that Adele had demonstrated Grenet's lapse in security, and had done so in front of a subordinate present because of Grenet's own decision, he was extremely vulnerable. She returned the smile coldly. Based on what she knew of the Alliance Intelligence Services, Mr. Bedang would have to be careful if he were to avoid dying in a freak accident before the Goldenfels reach her home port. "You're obviously a resourceful person, Mistress Mundy," Grenet said. "If matters work out as you say they will, I'll arrange a career path for you more suitable than nursemaiding farmers. But just how is it you propose to hand the Princess Cecile and her cargo over to us?" Adele brought out her handheld unit. "I built a program to modify all the yacht's control codes," she said. "I'll download them into your system." She gestured to the nearest console, the one where Bedang had been sitting. In fact, Adele hadn't had anything to do with creating the program. That was primarily Daniel, with input from Pasternak, Vessi, and even Tuning. The actual work was done by the ship's navigational computer, but devising the pathways by which to achieve the plan was a job of human minds. Very resourceful human minds. "When you send the program via a signal to the yacht over the normal watch frequency, everything including the fusion bottle will shut down. They won't be able to fire the plasma cannons, close their hatches, or do anything at all. They have backup controls, of course, but it'll take minutes, if not hours, before the ship will be operable again. By that time, it'll be in your hands, and the Earth Diamond with it." "It strikes me that if this doesn't work," Grenier said. His voice was completely expressionless, but his tongue clipped the syllables out like individual projectiles, "that the Goldenfels herself will be in a very dangerous position. Half her crew would be between the vessels, in what could turn into a killing zone if the Princess Cecile's cannon were not disabled." "Yes, of course," Adele said, as if unaware that Grenier was suggesting the possibility of her treachery rather than merely simple failure. She seated herself at Bedang's console and brought it live. "We'll test it before we leave here. You can display the yacht in real time, can't you?" As if the matter were already decided, Adele synced her handheld unit with the console's input port. Grenier opened his mouth to protest, then reverted to the vaguely superior sneer which he affected at the start of the conversation. "Yes, of course," he said, switching the standby milkiness of the second console's display to the three-dimensional hologram of the Princess Cecile, 150 yards away. Adele kept her expression blank as she worked, but her heart was singing in triumph. Like most of the librarian's triumphs, of course, it was completely invisible to everybody else. The results, however, would be quite evident. Of that, she was sure. The sun had been setting when the Sissy's officers trekked across the smoldering meadow to dinner, a performance commanded by the Alliance vessel's vastly great power. The Goldenfels had landed more than a mile upstream, but she wasn't vulnerable to the corvette's plasma bolts while she was setting down. The Alliance captain hadn't been concerned about damaging the natives' wares while the ship thundered a few feet off the ground toward a spot beside the Princess Cecile. At this hour, the Princess Cecile lay in darkness, which the gleam of her many open hatches picked out. Four guards sat on upturned buckets under a tarpaulin stretched into a marquee from bits above the main access port. One man, the image was crystal clear, but too small to show facial features, was playing a harmonica. "All right," Adele said, turning to Grenier. She held her control wands ready. "Tell me what signal you want for the trigger. I'll suggest something simple, but it's entirely up to you." Grenier frowned like thunder. "All right," he said abruptly. "RCN. Use that. The three letters. RCN. Adele's wands flickered. She looked up again. "All right," she said. "I ventured that. Simply transmit the program at 15.05 kilohertz with enough power that the Princess Cecile can pick up the signal. As close as we are, that's less power than it takes to light a match." Grenet hesitated. "Go ahead," Adele said impatiently. "For the test, it'll only shut them down for 2 seconds. When you've seen the demonstration, I'll set it to make the shutdown permanent the next time, which is for you to choose. But 3 or 4 in the morning seems to me to be suitable." "First, show me," Grenet said. "Now." Adele set down her wands and crossed her hands in her lap. "No. Send the signal yourself, Lieutenant. RCN, you said, send it." Grenet dropped heavily into the seat of the console he used before. With the virtual keyboard, he brought up a communications display as a sidebar. The real-time visuals of the Princess Cecile remained the main image. He checked his setup, then locked eyes with Adele momentarily before stabbing the execute button. The Princess Cecile's lights went out. Her hull gleamed faintly in the starlight. Battery-powered lights appeared, beads of illumination which emphasized the greater darkness. If there'd been an audio pickup, Adele and Grenier would have heard angry shouting. The Corvette's lights came on again, generally with a rush. A few quivered for a time as overage exciters struggled to build a charge. Adele, smiling with satisfaction, made a further adjustment with her wands. She put her handheld unit back in its pocket and rose. "They'll be wondering where we are," she said, "and I'm sure Captain Leary is getting a panic call from the duty officer saying that a fault shut off the ship's power momentarily. He'll leave and probably recommend the rest of us to leave with him. If I don't accompany them, there may be some kind of awkward questions." "Yes, we'll go back to the banquet compartment," Grenier said, unlocking the hatch. "There have been enough odd things happening already tonight."
Adele," Daniel asked, "I know you have, ways of listening. Have you learned anything about what's happening in the Goldenfels?"
He spoke in a low voice, pitching his words to carry across the hum of the bridge consoles operating on standby. The Princess Cecile waited under a complete lockout of radio communication ordered by Daniel and enforced by Adele through the signals console. Adele turned to look at him, past Sun and Betts at the gunnery and missile boards, respectively. The holographic displays, though blank, shed a pearly luminescence over the compartment. There was plenty of light to see by.
"I haven't tried," she said. "I won't try. Too many things could go wrong."
"Yes, of course," Daniel said. "Forgive me. Part of me keeps thinking of the Goldenfels as a freighter, and of course, it's not. The Alliance vessel could be, must be, presumed to have electronic defenses and countermeasures equal to the material armament which Daniel could deduce from structural hints. The only visible plasma weapons were the twin 10-centimeter guns in the forward turret, comparable to the Sissy's own guns. No freighter would voyage the north with less. The two double-opening hatch covers on the Goldenfels port side toward the Corvette and similar ones to the starboard were of the correct size to cover twin 15-centimeter guns. However, or less probably, individual 20-centimeter plasma cannon weapons whose single bolt would, at this range, vaporize half the Princess Cecile. Daniel assumed that the Alliance vessel had a missile armament as well, though that wasn't a matter of immediate concern. If things went as wrong as they might soon do, the Goldenfels wouldn't need missiles to destroy the Sissy utterly. Daniel chuckled. Sun looked over at him.
"Sir?"
A submachine gun hung from the back of the gunner's seat, though its primary task was to operate the plasma cannon if necessary. If things went as everyone hoped and expected, there wouldn't be shooting of any kind tonight. "If we think of this as a children's game, son," Daniel said, "us hiding in the shadows, waiting to jump out and surprise our friends, then it doesn't seem so frightening, does it?"
"Sir, I was raised in a tenement that looked out at Harbor 3. It was a tough place, I grant, but I don't recall having any friends with 6-inch guns."
After a moment, he chuckled at the thought. A moment later, Betts guffawed. Daniel smiled with appreciation. They were a good lot, a good crew, for hard times. And this was a very hard time. A bell chimed through the ship. Machinery purred or hissed according to its needs, but the vessel's human environment remained the same. The watches would be changed at the next bell, but not now. This was the last hour of sleep, the last hour of watching silent gauges, or the alien night before giving the boring duty over to your relief. If it was going to happen, it wouldn't be long, and it was certainly going to happen. Daniel had issued small arms to half the crew. He'd chosen from among the solidest personnel, but he also picked men and women who used guns in the past and were comfortable using them again, on human beings. That eliminated many otherwise suitable members of the crew. A man wasn't necessarily a coward because he wasn't willing to kill another person. A woman wasn't necessarily a monster because she was willing. He glanced at Adele, who was doing something at her console, the only unit on the bridge which was active. He, Betts, and Sun sat quietly at their post, ready to act when the balloon went up, but electronically silent till then. Normally at this hour, only the duty officer would have a live console. They had to assume that the Goldenfels could tell whether or not that was so. Adele said hers needed to be operating, and Daniel assumed she had a reason. She always had in the past. The Klimovs were in shock cradles in their own quarters, not in the bridge annex. For your safety, Daniel had told them, but in all truth, to keep them out of the way when he and his sissies had to react instantly and possibly in unplanned fashions. The Klimovs weren't fools, but they were sometimes willful. Survival tonight required discipline. And skill. And not a little luck. Daniel's eyes fell onto Vera, sitting on the deck with a submachine gun where she couldn't have been seen through the open access hatch. She was smiling faintly. Sometimes, of course, people willing to kill other people are monsters.
though Hogg, prepared to fire his stocked impeller from his hatch beside her, wasn't inhuman. He was just a countryman who killed as a normal part of life and in the full knowledge that he, too, would die and in his own time. It didn't seem to make much practical difference, but it made a difference in Daniel's mind. "They're about to move," Adele said. She didn't sound tense, but she spoke very precisely. "They're passing orders by voice only. They're being careful." "For what we are about to receive," Beth said, voicing the warrior's ancient joke, "the Lord make us thankful." All the lights aboard the Princess Cecile went out. Metal shrieked on the Goldenfels, the shutters sliding open to unmask the hidden turrets. "Wait for it," Wojcins bawled from B-deck, audible up the forward companionways. "Don't nobody fucking move!" Daniel poised, with his mouth and eyes both open. He heard the four guards outside the Sissy's main hatch run aboard, their boots clanging. Nothing more happened for a beat. A second beat. Captain Bertram wasn't acting rashly. Then, from hundreds of throats on the other side of the burned-over clearing came the cry, "Hoorah!" Adele's wand flicked. All the lights and displays aboard the Princess Cecile returned to full brightness. "Initiating ignition sequence," Daniel said. His finger stabbed execute on his virtual keypad, sending reaction mass to the thrusters to be stripped of electrons and expelled. "Now!" The Princess Cecile jolted as if eight trip hammers had struck her hull in close sequence. Normally, he'd have brought up the thrusters gently, equalizing the impulse to perfect unison before jumping them to real power. This wasn't a time for delicacy. Their gushing ions rebounded from the soil, some of it curling back through the corvette's open hatches. Daniel's face shield protected his eyes, but the skin of his throat and the back of his hands tinged. It'd be worse on the lower decks, but he very much doubted that the spacers there cared any more than he did. Hydraulic jacks rammed the Sissy's hatches closed as quickly as possible, but that still took time. An Alliance spacer fired his handheld weapon, without orders or possibly against them. Slugs rang, cling, 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 against the forward hull before a single ricochet moaned through an opening and across a compartment. Somebody cried out, but perhaps that was surprise rather than pain. The Princess Cecile shivered in balance, her bow a yard above the ground, her stern 6 inches lower. Daniel slid the vessel toward the river, using its manual controls because he didn't trust the software on a task with so many variables. The lower two-thirds of Daniel's display mapped the terrain and the corvette's direction of travel with sidebars for his gauges, but the top portion showed the Goldenfels in real time. She'd unmasked both starboard lateral turrets, each mounting twin 15-centimeter guns, as Daniel had surmised. They had the dorsal 10-centimeter cannon were aimed straight at the Princess Cecile's midpoint. A salvo would turn the corvette into a fireball visible from the Morzanga's distant moon. The guns didn't fire. Half the Goldenfels' crew had rushed from her hatches in the 15 seconds before Daniel lit his plasma thrusters. To avoid the Sissy's rainbow exhaust, members of the would-be assault party had thrown themselves down on the burned-over sward or turned hesitantly back toward their own vessel. Side-scatter from plasma cannon fired so close by in an atmosphere would incinerate scores, perhaps hundreds, of unprotected Alliance spacers. Captain Bertram wouldn't sacrifice so many personnel just to stop a fleeing foe, if only because he knew the survivors would lynch him if he did. The assault force had left the Goldenfels by sliding down chutes of sheet plastic from access ports on the upper decks, as well as from the main hatch, but they could return only by the regular boarding ramp. All the curses and threats from their officers couldn't get hundreds of weapon-burdened spacers up a single 2-meter ramp quickly. The Princess Cecile slid into the slough where she first landed. The terrain between here and the clearing was regular, but there was enough variation that the Goldenfels was no longer in direct sight. The Sissy would be safe from plasma bolts so long as the two ships remained in the same relation to one another. Dorse had tracked a surveillance camera to a tree at the edge of the clearing before the Goldenfels landed. It continued to provide visuals for the top of Daniel's display. Daniel kept the Sissy just above the surface, her forward speed no more than a fast walk. She roared in a blanket of steam over the mouth of the slough to the river proper, which was nearly a mile wide at the confluence. The last of the assault party was boarding the Goldenfels. The Alliance vessel was closed up, save for her main hatch. "Signals, officer," Daniel ordered, his hands busy with controlling his own ship. "Let the whole ship watch the visuals from the Goldenfels. Out!" An icon flickered, indicating that Adele had obeyed. She hadn't remembered to verbally acknowledge the command. RCN Signal School would have made Adele more conversant with military proprieties, but it wouldn't have taught her to do what she learned as a librarian, and those were the things on which the Princess Cecile and her crew depended. "Captain Bertram has just announced he's lighting his thrusters," Adele said over the ship's general channel. There was a rippling flash like chain lightning beneath the Goldenfels. The Alliance freighter lurched over on its side. Steam rose. For a few moments, a stutter of matter, antimatter, winked like the devil's eye. All 12 high-drive motors had devoured themselves, taking with them divots from the vessel's belly plates. Daniel brought the Princess Cecile to a standstill, hovering over the broad river in a ball of steam. Normally, he wouldn't lift into orbit until he lowered his vessel to the surface, but that itself would be tricky under the present conditions. The Goldenfels was almost certainly out of action for the future indefinite, but almost wasn't the same as certainly. Daniel didn't want to learn the hard way that Captain Bertram was an unusually lucky or resourceful officer. "Ship," Daniel ordered over the PA system. "Prepare for liftoff. Over." He reviewed the pre-lift checklist, knowing that Chunin, Pasternak, and the two midshipmen had already done the same thing. Three open hatches showed red when the display came up, but two winked out as he watched, and the third, a C-deck bulk port, had shown a false positive once before. "Six, this is four," said Pasternak from the power room. "I've got a team checking PC-17, but it may be 5 minutes. Over." "Roger, four," Daniel said. "We're not in so much of a hurry that we need to chance dumping our whole atmosphere. Six out." Because of the necessary delay, Daniel leaned back and took a deep breath for the first time since he returned from the Goldenfels banquet a lifetime ago. Grinning with a sudden thought, he resumed, "Ship, this is six. Those of you who watched the Goldenfels a few minutes ago have seen what happens when a ship engages its high-drive motors at the bottom of an atmosphere." He glanced toward Adele. Before he could ask her to do so, she began to rerun the explosions as an imagery loop available to all crewmen on their helmets if they didn't have access to better displays. "I'm sure you'll all join with me in thanking our signals officer, Miss Mundy," he continued, "who entered the Goldenfels operating system and cross-connected it so that a signal to light the plasma thrusters would engage the high drive instead." Daniel grinned broadly at the signals console, but Adele kept her head resolutely turned toward her display. "Hip, hip," Daniel said, and the whole ship's company echoed, "Hurrah!"